One river, many wells. Wisdom Springing from Global Faiths by Matthew Fox. Published by Torture Penguin in the year 2000. Introduction. Finally, Religion, 1999. It's not easy being a human being. Unlike other species, we're not born with enough programmed DNA to see us through our survival. The best choices we make must come from our intuition, cooperation, and learning. We depend on traditions and elders to teach us, and of course on experience, trial and error, and creativity as well. We find ourselves up against many obstacles, not only to surviving, but to living lives of quality and happiness. Wars, strife, famine, hurricanes, floods, fires, catastrophes of many kinds, divorce, death, sickness, poverty, abuse, slavery, oppression, betrayals. The human journey is not easy. Nor is it simple. Our strongest assets, our intelligence and our creative powers, can also get us into our deepest quagmires. Is not much of the ecological peril that we face today due to our inventions that have warmed the climate, put holes in the ozone, and polluted the waters? One thing that can make human existence meaningful and give us the courage and creativity to navigate our way is healthy spirituality. When religion is true to itself and is itself healthy, it is about spirituality. For spirituality is meant to be the core of religion. But religion, like everything else that humans touch, can become distorted and misused. It can develop its own institutional ego, even while preaching to individuals about the need to humble their personal egos. This has often happened. Therefore, it is evident that one can also be spiritual without religion. In times like ours, when the planet is reeling from abuse and misuse at the hands of humans, when human inventions and discoveries have shrunk time and space so that we can communicate by internet and satellites instantaneously with others around the globe, when livable space in our own and other species is dwindling and being depleted, it ought to prove especially beneficial to look to spirituality to help us find our way back and forward to what it means to be human. In this book, I try to go to the core of human religious traditions as we know them to find the spirituality that is there. It is clear that once we return to the depth or core of religion, we find much more than dogmas, concepts, institutions, commands. We find a striving for experience of the divine, however, that can be spoken of. We find both form and formlessness, male and female, experience and practice. We also find that in their core and depth, we do not encounter many different religions so much as one experience that is expressed variously and with great diversity and color flowing in the name of different traditions and cultures. This is what the 15th century theologian Nicholas of Cusa recognized. Cusa was a scientist and mystic and even a cardinal in the Roman Catholic Church. Well steeped in the mystical teachings of Meister Eckhart and a compatriot of Hildegard of Bingen, who lived 3 centuries previously, he foresaw the times we are living in today and the spiritual demands of our times. He wrote, quote, "Humanity will find that it is not a diversity of creeds, but the very same creed which is everywhere proposed. Even though you are designated in terms of different religions, yet you presuppose in all this diversity one religion which you call wisdom." End quote. In our own time, the Dalai Lama expressed similar views when he said in an interview, quote, "I believe deeply that we must find, all of us together, a new spirituality." The interviewer asks, "Which wouldn't be religious?" "Certainly not," says the Dalai Lama. "This new concept ought to be elaborated alongside the religions, in such a way that all people of goodwill could adhere to us." The interviewer says, "Even if they have no religion or are against religion?" The Dalai Lama's reply, "Absolutely. We need a new concept, a lay spirituality. We ought to promote this concept with the help of scientists." End quote. But the Dalai Lama, true to his own tradition, insists that work is necessary for this new spirituality to emerge. The work he speaks of is inner work, one that develops the seeds of peace within each of us. Quote, "Everything starts with us and with each of us. The indispensable qualities are peace of mind and compassion. Without them, it is useless to even try. Those qualities are indispensable. They are also inevitable. I've told you, we will surely find them in ourselves if we take the trouble to search for them. We can reject every form of religion, but we can't reject and cast off compassion and peace of mind." End quote. Inner work, which learns compassion and peace of mind, is the key to being human and is the key practice in spiritual traditions. This book does not intend to offer a course in comparative religions. Such studies are readily available. Rather, what I offer here is hopefully an interactive book, a book that itself elicits experience, an experience in experimental dimensions of faith, namely spirituality. How do I do this? My method is to choose sayings from the world's spiritual traditions and group them by common themes, themes that I believe are of interest and importance to all people in our perilous times. The citations are not complete or exhaustive, nor are they intended to be. They are intended to be suggestive and invitational in order to elicit interaction from the reader. I hope this interactive approach stirs the reader's thinking and imagination to think and to act. As the Buddhist monk Thai Chan Han put it, what matters, quote, is not a matter of faith, it is a matter of practice, end quote. I trust that this book and the structure of it will contribute to shared practice more than to doctrinal differences. We've had enough of them. But practice leads to ideas and includes categories, themes, or concepts. And so this book's concepts are carefully chosen and situated. There lies a kind of subtle logic between the connection of chapters. Each of the themes chosen interacts with the other themes. For example, the relation between joy and beauty, or between creation and community. Father Bede Griffiths, a Benedictine monk who lived for over half a century in India, running an ashram for Christians and Hindus, said that the time has come, quote, to share one another's spiritual riches. That is my goal in this book. Isn't it time that instead of trying to convert one another, we delved into one another's spiritual riches? We get to the core of religion by going to the heart experience, not by dwelling on doctrines that so easily divide within religious traditions. As Griffiths puts it, quote, if one starts with doctrines, the arguments are endless. But when one comes to the level of interior experience, that is where the meeting takes place. It is in this cave of the heart that the meeting has to take place. That is the challenge, end quote. My hope is that the themes chosen in this book and the sayings in them will take us into the caves of our hearts. What is deep ecumenicism? I begin with an observation from Meister Eckhart, who says that, quote, divinity is an underground river that no one can stop and no one can dam up, end quote. There is one underground river, but there are many wells into that river. An African well, a Taoist well, a Buddhist well, a Jewish well, a Muslim well, a goddess well, a Christian well, an Aborigine wells. Many wells, but one river. To go down a well is to practice a tradition, but we would make a grave mistake, an idolatrous one, if we confuse the well itself with the flowing waters of the underground river. Many wells, one river. That is deep ecumenicism. This book is an effort to get us into the wells and hopefully deeper into their source. Father Bede offers another metaphor for deep ecumenicism. Look at your fingers. If you look at their top side, you see five distinct entities, each waving in the breeze. But if you follow them down to their origin, they all merge in the palm of the hand. So too with our religions. If we just look at their top side, they appear distinct and independent and autonomous. But if you look at their source, they all come from the same center. Each of these images of deep ecumenicism, as well as the palm of the hand, is telling a common story. It is necessary to travel deeper, to let the superficial go, and to go to the center, the cave, if we are to connect with the underground river. This is what mystics mean when they instruct us to seek our inner person as opposed to our outer selves. Whenever possible, I use primary sources that include various scriptural texts of our religions, but also the mystical writings and, in some cases, the pottery, poetry, funeral texts, and other findings that lay bare the effort of our ancestors to express their wisdom about life, spirit, and the mysteries of being human. In some way, this book is a source book, a return to our sources that name our spiritual experience, can lead us to return to source itself, however we name it. In this book, I deliberately let the spiritual traditions speak on their own to the hearts and minds of the readers. I have tried to interfere as little as possible. I quote from the text of the ancient Kemet, or Egypt, in calling upon African wisdom, from the Bhagavad Gita, from the Hebrew and Christian Bible, from the Koran, from the Tao Te Ching, from Buddhist scriptures and Celtic authors and indigenous seers and scientists. These quotes will be in bold, but I also cite great mystics from these traditions, and their citations will also be in bold. I hope the citations alert the imagination of the reader to make her or his connections. I follow no particular order in presenting citations from various traditions. This, too, is deliberate. I want to ensure mixing at many levels of our awareness. In this book, I find myself to be a weaver and a mixer. My job is to weave threads from different spiritual traditions into a common web, a common tapestry that still values color, diversity, and difference. This task of weaving and mixing does not surprise me, for the postmodern times we live in are a time of mixing. The internet is mixing people of all cultures, ages, and religion. Ecumenicism is a recognition of religion's need to mix. We are finding more and more what an amazing mix this universe is. Our bodies, containing hydrogen atoms from 14 billion years ago, is quite a mix. Our DNA, our societies. Consider, for example, what an amazing mix is found in African-American culture, where African spirituality, slave history, protest songs, drumming cadences, and creative music all combine with European influences to create a unique expression of spirit and transcendence. This book is a mixing, a stirring together of the essence of religion, namely spirituality. The third millennium ought to be a time of mixing, not of conquering. Mixing, not converting. The mixing includes a mixing with science and with creation. Perhaps this book represents a start at putting together a scripture for the 21st century. It offers a kind of distillation of the best of our spiritual traditions and a grouping of them according to themes that strike me as pertinent to our soul and social needs. Carl Jung said that it is the mystics that we owe what is the best in humanity. We have to bear in mind, of course, that most ancient religions on our planet are not of a textual nature, but of an oral lineage. I try to make up for this lack with story. Dr. Molfai Kete-Ansante, a scholar of African religions and culture, makes some very important points about the general neglect of indigenous wisdom by Western theologians. quote, a powerful expressive modality allows Westerners and, increasingly, Asians to speak of the great religions and mean by such an expression Buddhism, Christianity, Islam, and Judaism. When the way to transcendence is found in people's lives as they deify their own nationalism and history, that becomes sufficiency and greatness for them. End quote. Asante points out that human civilization is so ancient in the Nile Valley that it antedates the Arab invasions by 5,000 years, and this resulted in, quote, the dispersal of the secret societies to various other places on the African continent, end quote, where an oral tradition survives to this day among the Yoruba Ifa, the Sona Mbira, and the Asante Okiyama systems. The Arab jihads swept out of Arabia and conquered North Africa, stamping out, for the most part, the indigenous Egyptian language and establishing Islam as the religion and Arabic as language. End quote. Asante's lament could apply to indigenous religions the world over in one form or another. Among the sayings I choose, I also include today's science along with many spiritual traditions. For many scientists in our time are seeing wisdom once again in a recognition of the mystery and wonder of the new cosmology. They are the teachers of nature's wisdom. While not being exhaustive, I also try to avoid exhaustion. By this, I mean that not every tradition will be cited in every theme. Ultimately, however, each tradition will be heard for its wisdom. This is not just a book for Westerners to learn about other traditions, but hopefully to learn more about their own. The Dalai Lama warns that the biggest obstacle to interfaith sharing is people's unhealthy relationships to their own faith. Citations from Western spiritual sources predominate in this book, because that is where much unhealth lies. So many people I encounter have been wounded by their own tradition. So many are ignorant of the deepest spiritual teachings of that same tradition. Many Westerners do not even know their own mystical tradition or spiritual practice. At times, I will mix insights of several traditions in one paragraph, but mostly I let them speak for themselves on separate pages, and I invite the reader to participate by mixing. If pursued in depth and used to unite instead of to separate our various wisdom traditions, the themes of this book can assist the simplifying of our religions, stripping them down to their essentials, that is, to spirituality. The Dalai Lama has observed that, quote, the reality is that the majority of people today are unpersuaded of the need for religion, end quote. He calls, however, for a, quote, spiritual revolution. End quote. The task of awakening to our spiritual heritage as a species is an important one as our species wades into the unprecedented challenges and possibilities in the future that calls us on. Recently, after one of our techno-cosmic masses, a 21-year-old came up to me and said, quote, finally, religion, 1999. I've been waiting for this all my life, end quote. When I asked him what was the key to the experience for him, he replied, quote, when I experienced a Jewish rabbi, a Muslim woman and preacher, a Christian priest, and an African song leader, all on the altar together, leading us in prayers of gratitude, I said to myself, quote, finally, religion is catching up. Finally, religion, 1999, end quote. This young man is correct. It is time for religions to quit bickering and start contributing. As the Dalai Lama puts it, now more than ever, we need to show our children that distinctions between my country and your country, my religion and your religion, are secondary considerations. In today's increasingly complex and interdependent world, we're compelled to acknowledge the existence of other cultures, other faiths, end quote. The young generation today is facing survival issues around realities of earth degradation and economic exploitation and growing chasms between haves and have-nots that are unprecedented. Is it not time for our religions to get back to their essentials, which is meant to be the teaching of spirituality, and to contribute wisdom to an increasingly despairing world? This is not a time for denominational one-upmanship. It is a time to cull wisdom from any and all of its sources and let folly go, even and including religious folly. One reason I depend in this book so heavily upon mystical writings is offered by Carl Jung when he observed that, quote, "It is only the mystic who brings creativity to religion," end quote. If we are to make our faiths live again, not for their own sakes, but for the survival of our species, we had better become mystically literate again. The format of this book is an effort to further the cause of mystical literacy. The mystics are fun, and they invite us to fun. They are also outlandish, and they invite us to play at the extremities of the heart. They are also prophets who urge us to rejuvenate our systems of education, economics, and all our work worlds and professions. Some people will raise objections to what we are doing by calling it, quote, syncretism. Are we fusing too many religions together? They will ask. The word synchronism actually comes from creating of a federation of cities in Crete. In itself, the creating of a federation of religions striving to be spiritualities in our time does not seem like such a horrible prospect. Certainly beats going to war with one another. Perhaps Father Betty Griffiths had the best response to the objection of syncretizing when he observed, quote, "We have, of course, to guard against syncretism of any kind, but this only means that we have to learn to discriminate between each tradition, between which belongs to the universal religious traditions of mankind and that which belongs to its own limited and particular point of view," end quote. While we want to honor the differences between faiths, it is time to emphasize the likenesses, or what Griffiths calls, quote, "the universal religious tradition of mankind," end quote. Father Bede experienced, quote, "the most profound sense of mystery and sacrament as he found it in Hinduism and life in India. He marveled at the temples in whose holy place there is encountered the Garbha Griha, the center, quote, at once of the universe and of the soul. It is the womb from which all things spring, and at the same time a cave within the heart, the secret place where man enters into communion with ultimate mystery," end quote. Is it wrong to want to visit such a place? Is syncretism to say that other religions, including Catholicism, strive to create such caves of the heart? To point out that Francis of Assisi often sought out caves to pray in? That is the profound point that Griffiths is making. We need to discern that which belongs to the universal religious traditions of mankind. In laying out the 18 themes of this book, we are inviting the universal tradition of mankind. The horrible wars in Bosnia and Kosovo in our day, the inquisitions, crusades, pogroms, religious wars, and colonial conquests in the name of religion. Haven't we seen enough of the shadow side of religious power? It is time our species grew up. This means, among other things, that instead of relating religion to religion with our reptilian brains and our testosterone in high gear, quote, "my God can beat up your God," we ought to relate religion to religion from our deepest hearts and most creative, mindful minds. Reptiles, after all, do not engage in religion or pretend to. So why would we want to engage one another religiously at that level? Our deepest hearts and fullest minds are our mystical and intellectual capacities. This is what this book is trying to accomplish, a meeting of hearts and minds at a deeper place, a place of wells and watering and wisdom and mystery, not of judgment, relating heart to heart and creative mind about issues that concern our species profoundly. What are these issues? I propose 18. They constitute the chapter titles for this book. I group them into four areas: relating to creation, relating to divinity, relating to ourselves, paths to encounter and enlightenment, and relating to the future, what the divine is asking of us. Within these groupings are the individual themes that can be found listed in the table of contents. This book ends with a big surprise. It surprised me. I hope it surprises others. When we focus on key issues of concern, such as 18 themes I employ, we are de facto involved in myth-making. This book, though I did not intend it, has proven to be a step in re-mythologizing our faith lives. By our, I do not mean just Christians or Jewish peoples, but all those traditions represented here, including science. Deep ecumenicism leads us to new myth-making and ushers in a social vision that might seize the moral and spiritual imagination of our species, not unlike what occurred 2,000 years ago in Palestine. It is in the deepest message of each faith, I believe, that we encounter the likenesses. For this to happen, each faith must get to its deepest essence and know its spiritual sources. In the West, discoveries of ancient and lost manuscripts in this century and new scientific methods, as well as new cosmology from science, have contributed to a rare opportunity to reinvent both Judaism and Christianity. This return to the sources can provide a social vision and community inspiration that takes us beyond empire building and religion by institution. Hopefully, the themes chosen here will bring ancient and needed messages up from the deep. Paths down to the wells will indeed vary, and there lies the beauty and novelty of human diversity. But the past must never be confused with the source. As Meister Eckhart puts it, quote, all paths lead to God, for God is on them, all equally for the person who knows, end quote. Hopefully this book will contribute to our shared knowing and practicing so that our children's future will know ways to live peacefully on and with this earth and healthy directions to travel. Dated August 4th, 1999, Matthew Fox from the University of Creation Spirituality, Oakland, California. This concludes the introduction as read by David Bradshaw of MyIdeaFactory.net.